Okay.
Welcome to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is March 30th, 2017. We are going to start with House Bill 3160. Open a work hearing on 3160. Cassie, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3160 allows an individual who has limited vision to carry and use a white cane on highways and other places. The measure includes an individual who has limited vision within established offenses for unlawful use of a white cane and for a driver of a motor vehicle failing to stop when the individual with limited vision is crossing a roadway. The measure defines limited vision as visual acuity not exceeding 20/70 and is no worse than 20/200 in the better eye with corrective lenses. The measure also redefines blind to include a visual acuity not exceeding 20/200 in the better eye with corrective lenses. We have a -1 amendment, and the -1 amendment redefines blind and deaf to deaf hyphen blind. We have both the fiscal, and the fiscal is minimal, and the revenue, there is no impact.
Okay. Vice Chair.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated March 27, 2017.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated March 27th, 2017. Is there any discussion? All right. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 3160 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 3160 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? All right. Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Borsig?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kennedy?
Aye. Okay. The bill passes, goes to the floor, and
who do you have to carry it?
I think it's going to be Peluso and Doherty.
Yes.
Co-carriers, is that right?
I will double check with
Chair
Doherty.
So for now.
Yep.
Okay, great. All right. I close the work session on House Bill 3160, open a work session on House Bill 2570, and Cassie, please remind us what that is.
House Bill 2570 directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to establish the Affordable Homeownership Grant Program to provide grants to eligible nonprofit organizations with homeownership programs, providing opportunities to persons in low-income households throughout the state. The bill specifies the purpose of the grant to be for purchase or leverage or to leverage loans for new homes, rehabilitate homes, or purchase manufactured homes for first-time low-income homeowners or for the nonprofit. The bill specifies the application process for the nonprofit organization applying to participate in the Affordable Homeownership Grant Program and requirements for repayment of the grant. The bill requires the nonprofit organization to report annually to OHCS on the status and use of grant funds, including information on activities, loans, number of homes or manufactured homes purchased, constructed, or rehabilitated, the amount of administrative expenses, and demographic data on recipients. The bill requires nonprofit organizations to create and administer a revolving fund for recipients to purchase, construct, or rehabilitate a home or manufactured home, and establishes the Affordable Home Ownership Grant Program Fund separate from the general fund and appropriates $25 million from the general fund to the Affordable Home Ownership Grant Fund beginning July 1st, 2017. We do have a -1 amendment, and the -1 amendment defines first-time homeowner as an individual who has not owned or purchased individually or jointly a single-family residence during a period of 3 years immediately prior to the date of the purchase of a single-family home residence. The amendment clarifies the definition of first-time homeowner to not apply to displaced homemakers or individuals who have lost homeownership as a result of divorce or owners of manufactured homes, and clarifies that grants to be awarded in geographically diverse manner throughout the state. We have the fiscal, and the fiscal is $25 million, and the revenue impact is minimal. There is a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
All right. Can we have a motion?
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated March 20, 2017.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated March 20, 2017. Any discussion on the amendments? They're basically to clarify who is included in the first-time home ownership. And it's for a duration of period, but in some cases, like manufactured homes and others, when people might lose their home and they really need an opportunity to buy another home, that's what this allows for. So, and it also brings it into alignment with other bills. So, okay. Are there any further discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? All right, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Kinnegar, I move House Bill 2570 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill will be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 2570 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
So I think this is a fine program, so I'm okay with it. I also might get a bite at the apple at this during my Ways and Means sub. So and that might be a different discussion for me. So I'll try to keep the two separate there. So this is good policy, but might be too expensive, so I've yet to see on that.
I appreciate that. You're wearing your policy lens now. Is this a good program? And then you'll have to weigh it with all the other considerations in the sub.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Rep. Nierman just stole my thunder. I have a feeling that we're going to see this a lot today where, you know, things that are, this is a great idea. Funding it is going to be a different discussion. And so I'm going to support the idea.
Today. Okay. Representative Olson, you're one of the chief sponsors. Would you like to say anything about it?
I'd like the bill.
So it's a good bipartisan bill. We have Representative Wisnant is also a co-chief sponsor of this, and we know that Oregon is has one of the lowest home ownership rates. I appreciate there are many different attempts here to address that, but we, as I've said to Representative Meek, since he has two other bills that he's chief sponsoring on home ownership, you know, I'd really like to see this committee take on a big commitment to move us from the 60 or 62% home ownership rate that we have right now. I think it fluctuates up to 70. I mean, I think if we made a really concerted effort, we know we've all talked about how that stabilizes families and communities and schools and things like that. And this was the program. There's several different programs out there. This is the one that gives the revolving loan funds to different nonprofits like Habitat for Humanity. I think it's a great program. My only complaint had been I wish it were $50 million, not $25. So, but I respect that the sub is going to have challenges looking at where we can get funding. This is a very critical one. So any other discussion on this? Okay, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Wait.
Oh, yeah, we did. Do the motion?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so we were under the discussion phase.
Yeah.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kinnegar? Aye. All right. House Bill 2570 goes to the floor and goes to Ways and Means, I'm sorry. And we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2570. Opening a work session on House Bill 2961. Could you please read the summary?
House Bill 2961 establishes the Home Ownership Repair and Rehabilitation Program within the Housing and Community Services Department to provide grants to eligible nonprofit organizations to provide financial assistance to eligible low-income households for repair and rehabilitation of their residence. The bill specifies eligibility and agreement requirements for nonprofit organizations to receive grants from OHCS and requires grant program recipients to report to OHCS regarding the status and use of grant funds. The bill establishes the Home Ownership Repair and Rehabilitation Program Fund and continuously appropriates money to fund the program at OHCS and appropriates $10 million from the general fund to establish and implement the fund. The bill becomes operative January 1st, 2018, and declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. We have the fiscal, and the fiscal is further, they need further analysis, and the revenue is minimal. There is a sub-referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Chair Kenny Guyer, I move House Bill 2961 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Committee on Ways and Means for prior reference.
Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 2961 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Can I just say ditto from last time?
Ditto. Okay.
Ditto. Me too.
Ditto. Yes. And I note on this that Representative Noble and Representative Olson are co-sponsors of the bill, along with Representative Wisnant is a co-sponsor of the bill. Representative Gomberg is in the first chief sponsor position, so good team of people here.
Yeah, it was funny to watch the Madam Chair of the three amigos up here at the same time.
Amigos, three musketeers. Okay, great. So no further discussion. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Forsyth?
Yes.
Representative Meade?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Luso? Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
And Chair
Kinga. Aye. Okay, House Bill 2961 moves to the floor. I will appoint. Goes to Ways and Means again, I'm sorry. Goes to Ways and Means, no carrier. Motion passes. Closing a work session on House Bill 2961. Opening a work session on House Bill 3175. Yes, please read the summary.
House Bill 3175 modifies the definition for low-income households, clarifying income levels for households renting and households owning residential housing in the Local Innovation and Fast Track Housing Program. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. We have both the fiscal and the revenue, and there are no impacts for both of those.
Okay.
Chair Kenny Guyer, I move House Bill 3175 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 3175 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? So again, I just want to remind people that this basically says in the LIFT program, local innovation fast track housing, there's been no allocation for it yet. There will be a request for it. I'm hoping to see $100 million. But whatever it gets, that 20% of it would have a different income eligibility to allow some of it to go to home ownership as opposed to building rentals. So it's just adding more flexibility so that they can do that if they choose. Okay. No other questions? Discussion? All right. Please call the roll.
Representative Barsick?
Yes.
Representative Meade?
Aye.
Representative
Nierman?
Aye.
Representative
Luso? Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kinga. Aye. Okay. That was House Bill 3175. Moves to the floor. And who's the primary chief sponsor on that one?
That was Gomberg and Wisnant.
Gomberg and Wisnant.
Okay, I'll assign Gomberg and Wisden as co-carriers to that and close the work session on House Bill 3175. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2912. Cassie, please read the amendment.
House Bill 2912 establishes the Affordable Housing Land Acquisition Revolving Loan Fund Program within Oregon Housing and Community Services Department to make loans to eligible organizations to purchase land for development of affordable housing and facilities providing supportive services to low-income households. The bill directs 40% of the loans to be allocated to eligible organizations operating home ownership programs for low-income households and 60% of loans to be allocated to other eligible organizations. The bill specifies loan requirements for development of affordable housing units and repayment for non-compliance. The bill requires OHCS or program administrator to collect data and develop performance measures for the program, including financial efficiency. The bill also establishes the Affordable Housing Land Acquisition Revolving Fund in the State Treasury and continuously appropriates money in the fund to OHCS. We have both the fiscal and the revenue. The fiscal requires further analysis and the revenue has no impact. There is a sub-referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Chair Kenny Guyer, I move House Bill 2912 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 2912 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion on this bill? All right. All right, then, Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative
Dorsey.
Yes.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Nobel.
Aye.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez. Aye. Chair Kennedy. Aye. All right.
The motion passes. We'll sign Representative Going to the
Ways and Means.
So eager for these to get to the floor. All right.
Ways and Means.
Passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2912. And open a work session on House Bill 3192.
3192?
There we go. Yes. Cassie, please read the... House Bill 3192 establishes the Homeownership Down Payment Assistance Program within Housing and Community Services Department to provide grants to eligible nonprofit organizations, housing authorities, and local governments to provide financial assistance to first-time low-income homebuyers for purchase of single-family residences. The bill defines low-income households as households with an income at or less than 100% of the area median income and specifies qualifications and application process for eligible organizations, authority, or low-income government, including demonstration of capacity to administer grants. The bill requires grant program recipient to report to OHCS annually regarding the status and use of grant funds and establishes the Home Ownership Down Payment Assistance Program Fund and continuously appropriates money to fund the program at OHCS. $5 million is appropriated from the general fund to establish and implement the fund and becomes operative January 1st, 2018, and the bill also declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. We have a dash one amendment, and the dash one amendment changes the measure and directs OHCS to provide funds to assist first-time home buyers from low-income households through programs administered by OHCS, including the Home Ownership Assistance Account. The amendment requires OHCS to make grants to eligible nonprofits, housing authorities, and local governments to provide financial assistance to eligible first-time home buyers to pay eligible costs and specifies the purposes for the grant use. The amendment also establishes the Home Ownership Down Payment Assistance Fund and appropriates $5 million from the general fund to implement and administer the grants. The amendment becomes operative January 1st, 2018 and declares an emergency effective July 1st. We have the fiscal and the revenue on the dash one. The fiscal requires further analysis and the revenue is minimal. There is a sub-referral to the Committee on Revenue and also another sub-referral to Ways and Means after that.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. Chair Kenny Guyer, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 13, 2017.
Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 13, 2017. Is there any discussion? All right. Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Kenny Guyer, I move House Bill 3192 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 3192 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Newman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So when I was looking at this, I was thinking that this is kind of redundant with the FHA program, which to me seems like it kind of goes pretty far as supporting first-time home buyers. So I guess now I'm going to violate what I did earlier. I'll put a fiscal hat on and say that maybe this $5 million could be used better elsewhere, so I'll be a no on this.
Okay. And Representative Meek, this is your bill. Was there anything you'd like to do to explain how this may differ from FHA?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. The FHA program is a mortgage program that allows buyers that qualify, anybody really qualifies for a FHA program. It's a little more expensive because you have certain mortgage PMI,
private mortgage insurance.
Private mortgage insurance. part of that expense is you're only required to come up with a 3.5% down payment. So the FHA program is allowing folks, the traditional conventional loan would usually require at least a 5% down payment. So it allows a first-time home buyer to come in with less funds. So the FHA program is a federal program, and what we're looking to do is to help inspire folks in our communities to save and have an opportunity to save and come up with their own down payment. Because regardless of what the FHA mortgage provides, you still have to come up with your down payment and closing costs. So in some cases, the lender will allow you to roll in the closing costs if you have a willing seller that's willing to, you know, credit you money out of the purchase price that you've offered. So this, the $5 million, if that's what the fiscal is very well spent, because we're talking about allowing folks the opportunity to get a first-time home and assistance with that down payment. So they're two different programs, two distinct different programs, and I think that this is an opportunity for us to help folks with that assistance. So, yeah, thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I was going to say one of the other things that I think the value added of this program, you talked about the insurance cost that you need for FHA, but the other thing is that this works with nonprofits that really help people with some of the technical assistance around financial literacy. So I think going through nonprofits is something that the federal government can't do, but really kind of hand-holding and making sure that people have you know, if they start this process, that they can really complete it, and they can play, you know, they plan ahead, they plan fiscally, and make sure that they have their mortgage so that they don't lose that very valuable down payment. So I think this is a really good complement to the FHA. Okay. Any other questions or discussion on this bill? Okay. So could you please call the roll on the amendments? We're still on the amendments, right?
Nope, we've
voted on the amendments. I'm sorry, okay. All right. We'll call the roll anyway.
Yes.
Aye.
No.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kenny?
Aye. Okay. We can't assign a carrier yet again. All right. Let's see. Where are we? Okay. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3192. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2724. Cassie, please read the summary.
House Bill 2724 directs Oregon Housing and Community Services to develop and implement the Rent Guarantee Program to provide tenants from low-income households training on achieving successful tenancy and certification of training and providing incentives and financial assistance for unpaid rent, eviction, and property damages to landlords renting or leasing to low-income households with certain limitations. The bill requires OHCS to provide tenants from low-income households training on achieving successful tenancy and certification of training, and requires landlords to collect metrics including length of tenancy, reason for termination, amount of unpaid rent and damages, and provide a report to OHCS before receiving financial assistance. The bill authorizes OHCS to contract with eligible public or private providers to administer the program and distribute funds throughout the state. The bill establishes the Rent Guarantee Program Fund within the state treasury and appropriates money to OHCS for administration of the Rent Guarantee Program. We last heard this in February 23rd, so it was a while ago. But we do have the fiscal and the revenue. The fiscal is $98,247, and the revenue is minimal. There is a sub-referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, motion. Yes, sir.
Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2724 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 2724 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
I do want to say that this is in Multnomah County, of course, that we had a program very similar to this. The county had actually done some of these the fund pieces and did the guarantee for folks when we still do it. We still do the program there, and it has been one of the best possible ways to assure landlords that there is a fallback if there's an issue with a renter who may not have been the best renter in the world. But the bigger thing that it does is it educates renters. And I have to say that one of the things that I know as a social worker, and somebody's been doing this work for many, many years in housing and dealing with folks who have had lots of different struggles in their lives, they don't always get the information, like, how do you be a good renter? How do you keep track of your bank account? How do you even know whether or not you have issues on your personal record that will make a difference in what a landlord looks at and thinks about? It gives them great opportunities to learn those things, to actually essentially do a bean count of what your bills are going to be so that they can know what they can afford and what they can't, and to figure out how do you prioritize that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people grow up in families, in particular kiddos in foster care, grow up in families where they don't always get that kind of information. This is such an amazing program, and it allows people the opportunity to learn things that they just didn't have an opportunity to learn. And how to be good renters is a really, really important thing, and not everybody gets that. So I just think this is such an amazing opportunity that we have to provide that guarantee to be able to ensure landlords that take a chance on this person. They may have they may be great, they may not. And if they're not, we're going to help you out in the end. But if you take a chance on somebody who's actually taken weeks and weeks to learn how to do it differently, it's a good opportunity. And it's really probably some of the best things that we can do for people in our communities who are struggling.
That's great. Representative Bierman.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And thanks, Representative Sanchez, for that description. That really was a good advertisement for this program.
Here.
So I just wanted to say, out of abundance of caution and transparency, that I'm a Section 8 landlord, and so I interact with the people that you described there. So and I agree that this is a good program. So,
thank you. And just a little bit of added history, because Vice Chair Sanchez talked about it happening at the county level. It used to be a program that was funded by the state, and the state gave some money to counties. And then in the recession, when we had to cut back, the state stopped doing this, and some of the counties found it so valuable and were able to have the resources that they continued doing it. So some of the bigger counties, like Multnomah County, were able to do it. But I think it was really the smaller counties that couldn't come up with their own resources that have been particularly hurt by not having a statewide program. And so part of it is the training, as she talked about, the training for tenants to talk about if part of the reason that it's hard for them to get a new tenancy is they might have a bad record of FEDs or not having paid rent or things like that. And so the program actually helps them clear up their debt history and do that, again, that financial literacy. How do you make sure that you can be a good tenant and uphold your end of the bargain? And then the other part of it is to provide resources, kind of a safety net for landlords who are willing to take a chance on people who have had some kind of shaky history, and provide up to $2,000 in a fund, a mitigation fund, if anything happens, if people leave and have fallen short on rent or any other kind of reason. And so what they have found in the past, that the person will leave with like a certificate of good standing,
right.
Is that what it is? And it's given to the landlord, and any landlord that accepts somebody with the certification having gone through the training is eligible for that fund. It's very rarely drawn upon because the program is so successful at really helping tenants become really good tenants. So this is a great program, and Representative Dallas Hurd was a part of the committee and signed on to it after he was so excited about it. So I just want to express his voice. It's probably the bill he said that he heard during his time here that he got most excited by. So any other discussion on this bill? Nope. All right, then. Please call the roll.
Representative Borsig?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative
Sigman? Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Caruso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kenny
Dyer? Aye. Okay. House Bill 2724 moves to Ways and Means. I close the work session on House Bill 2724. And let's see what we have next. 2724. All right. Open a work session on House Bill 2959. Cassie, could you please read the summary?
House Bill 2959 appropriates monies from the general fund to Department of Human Services to administer the General Assistance Project. The bill declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. We have the fiscal, and the fiscal is $2,938,307 for the 2017-2019 biennium. There's no revenue impact, and there is a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay. Chair Kenny Geyer, I move House Bill 2959 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 2959 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
I will.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Chair Kenny Geyer. Again, we need to just get this done. We already did it once, over and over, and we shouldn't need a bill, but sometimes we make our voice heard louder when we have a bill.
Okay, great. So this is a continuation of a bill. Just again, I'll try to give a little context again. He knows what he's talking about, so he's like, okay, let's just do it. I'll try to give a little more context so you know what you're, so you might remember, because I think it was a long time ago we heard it. So the General Assistance Program was another program that we had in place a long time ago, and then it got suspended for a while or ended for a while because we didn't have the money. And basically what it does is it allows people who it's pretty obvious that they have a disability. Often it's a mental health disability, and they need to apply for SSI, SSDI to the federal government, and it often takes about 2 years for that to come through. And in the meantime, if they don't have any support, or it could be somebody who was hit by a car, paralyzed, and then loses their job, and if they can't pay their rent, they could be out on the streets. And that, we know, costs a lot more to our healthcare systems. And so for the people that is quite obvious that they're probably going to pass, the federal government will end up coming up with that money to support them on a monthly basis, but it often takes 2 years to go through to get through the federal bureaucracy. And so DHS provides case management and monthly cash payments to help keep them afloat until the time. And then when the federal money comes in, DHS is reimbursed for all of those cash payments. There's still the case management that we have to pay for, but it's often keeping people stabilized and not on the streets where they end up costing a lot more money to the system. So I'm really delighted that I'm one of the co-chief sponsors, along with my former vice chair, Representative Stark, my current vice chair, Representative Olson, and my other current vice chair, Representative Sanchez. So anyway, I think this is a great bill for this committee to take on. It's kind of a combination of the human service side and the housing side. It's a great intersection. Any other discussion on this bill? All right, seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Borson?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative
Kalusa? Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kinnegar? Aye. All right. House Bill 2959 moves to Ways and Means, and I close the work session on House Bill 2959. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2004. Cassie, could you please read the summary?
Yes. House Bill 2004 repeals the prohibition on a city or county ordinance regulating rent of a dwelling unit. The bill requires a landlord to provide cause and notice for termination of month-to-month tenancy and provides exceptions including property repairs or renovations causing inhabitability, property conversion to other use, demolition, unhabitable dwelling conditions, purchase of the unit for a person's primary of the landlord's primary residence or occupation of the unit as primary landlord residence. The bill requires a landlord who terminates tenancy under an exception to provide 90-day notice with stated exception and relocation assistance for the tenant. The bill defines relocation assistance as payment equal to 3 months' rent plus the security deposit, and prohibits a landlord from terminating a tenancy without notice or relocation assistance. The bill requires a fixed-term tenancy to become month-to-month upon end of original fixed-term term, unless the tenant agrees to renew or terminate the tenancy. The bill allows a tenant of a month-to-month tenancy to terminate the tenancy with no cause, providing a 30-day notice to the landlord, and requires the landlord of a fixed-term tenant to offer renewal equal to the duration of the existing fixed term, 90 days prior to the specified end date. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. We have a dash six amendment. The dash six amendment removes the definition for relocation assistance. And the amendment allows a landlord to terminate month-to-month tenancy any time for no cause during the first 6 months of occupancy with 30-day written notice. The amendment also requires a landlord to provide cause or and 30-day notice when terminating a month-to-month tenancy after the first 6 months, and requires a landlord to provide cause and 30-day written notice prior to the specified end date for a fixed-term tenancy. The amendment allows a landlord living on a property with two units or less to terminate the tenancy at any time for no cause, providing a 30-day notice during the first year or a 60-day notice after the first year of tenancy to the tenant. The amendment allows a tenant of a month-to-month tenancy to terminate the tenancy with no cause, providing a 30-day written notice to the landlord. And it also allows a tenant of a fixed-term tenancy to terminate the tenancy with no cause, providing written notice 30 days prior to either the specified end date of the tenancy or the designated date in the notice. The amendment requires a fixed-term tenancy to become month-to-month upon end of the original fixed term if the landlord does not offer renewal of the fixed-term tenancy. The amendment provides exceptions for landlord providing cause for termination of month-to-month tenancy or avoidance of fixed-term renewal if the landlord provides 90-day written notice. The amendment requires the landlord of more than four dwelling units terminating a tenancy under an exception to state the reasoning in the written notice and pay the tenant 1 month's periodic rent. The amendment also requires a landlord terminating the tenancy under a repair exemption to offer previous tenant a new rental agreement prior to new tenants, and also requires a landlord of more than four dwelling units terminating the tenancy under an exception to give notice to the tenant about the reason and pay equal to 1 month's periodic rent. The amendment requires the landlord terminating the tenancy in violation of the terms to pay equal to 3 months' rent in addition to any damages to the tenant, and allows a tenant to recover payment for violation and damages within 1 year after knowing the violation occurred. And this applies to new or fixed-term fixed-term tenancies after the effective date, and applies to month-to-month tenancies 30 days after the effective date. The amendment also removes the repeal of the prohibition on city or county ordinance regulating rent of a dwelling unit, and amends the statute allowing city or county to adopt an ordinance or resolution implementing a rent stabilization program within their jurisdiction. The amendment specifies provisions of the rent stabilization program, including providing landlord fair rate of return, process for landlord to petition an increase in rent, and exempts new residential developments for 5 years. We have both the fiscal and the revenue impact. There's a minimal fiscal impact, and there is no revenue impact.
Okay, can I have a motion, please?
Oh, sorry. I was so concentrated on
it. It was a very long read, I have to say.
Okay.
Chair Kinnegar, I move to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated March 28, 2017.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves to adopt the Dash 6 amendments dated March 28, 2017. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to speak to the amendment. And okay. Should I speak from here or come to the...
Wherever you'd like.
I think I'd like to come up there, if that's okay.
That's great.
While he's sitting, may I ask a question?
Sure.
Is that analysis that you just read on OLIS?
It is.
That language?
It is not.
That was something that I prepared. It is in my staff measure summary. So, yes, it is on OLIS.
Okay. I'm trying to find it. I'm not seeing it.
It's in under meeting materials.
B2004-6, preliminary SMX. It's right in the bottom.
Okay. The amendment's up,
I would
right?
look under today's date because you'll get all of the meeting materials from the hearing that we had.
Yeah, if you go under today's date and then under the bill.
Yeah, I found it. Thank you.
So what she just read is up there?
It's within my staff measure summary.
Okay, Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mark Meek, Representative of House District 40. And thank you for your consideration of this Dash 6 amendment. And just in this capacity, I wanted to explain that I am a property manager, a property owner, an investment property owner. I'm a landlord, and I'm a realtor. And so if I was sitting here making a decision based on just that segment of my life and who I represent, then I would vote no on House Bill 2004 as it sits. I sat through many hours of testimony with both landlords and tenants coming to us, and in that capacity and sitting up on this committee with yourselves, had to take consideration of what are we trying to do and who are we trying to serve here. It needs to explain that as we look at 38% folks that are renting out there, if you're getting more emails from landlords than tenants, well, there's more homeowners and property owners than there are tenants. And so their voice is out there. They have spoken. And so I tried to listen, and I tried to listen with very thoughtfulness of trying to understand where property owners are coming from and where tenants are coming from. And so that, unlike the summary, my understanding of the amendments, which is what I wanted to touch certain things, is that, you know, that the tenants are bearing the brunt of this very, very unfair supply and demand market, that it is a scarcity market, and it's not typical of your normal supply and demand curves. So any economic analysis we do is not able to really show the current conditions that we're in. And everybody agrees to a person that we need more supply, both affordable housing supply and both workforce housing supply and general supply and any supply in general. So when I heard from tenants is that that an eviction can turn their world upside down, and that they need stability to build prosperous lives. Some landlords are using evictions in a discriminatory manner, and others are opportunistic with the current economic conditions. And I applaud that. I want to give them the opportunity to renovate and use the properties to their best and highest use. And we're not trying to stifle that. We need to make sure that landlords provide a reason, though, for evicting a tenant and give a tenant a chance. If it's an economic reason that you're evicting folks or terminating your lease, then I think that if this tenant has been a long-term tenant of yours and I advocate for investment owners and property owners. And I always tell my investment workers that are first time trying to figure out they're going to buy an investment, they're going to have a rental, is you are working on buying a piggy bank. You're going to bring your down payments and your hard work and sweat. You're buying a piggy bank that other people are going to be putting money into. And that is the model. If you bring it down to just brass tacks, other people are putting money, buying down, paying down your mortgage debt, paying your property taxes, and it is a great investment. And let me tell you this, that all Oregonians and anybody looking to invest in Oregon, it is still a good bet. Mm-hmm. We have very low vacancies. And being a property owner and investment property owner is still a very good bet. So. But also I heard from small landlords that, you know, this 3-month relocation cost is very expensive, and that's not in my business model of trying to prepare. If I'm going to make some changes, that I have to provide 3 months relocation expenses. So I was glad to see that through the good work of the folks on this committee and other folks in this building and in around the state, that we're able to come to an agreement with some of the Dash 6 amendments that I'm proposing. So giving some relief from property owners and also giving relief from small property owners, there are smaller, you know, investors that own four or less units, they are exempt from the paying the relocation cost. And so I know but when you're getting more than four, you're getting into the commercial aspect, and if you're going to be making decisions to evict your tenants or end your lease, then you may have some responsibility for that. And that's just part of what is here. And then I heard that lifting the preemption on rent control will result in first-generation style policies that would negatively impact new construction. So that's why we all know in order to get more supply, we have to have investment and development and building of more units in this state in both our populated and rural areas. So that's why I've added the amendment that new construction would be exempt for the first 5 years. And some may say that's not enough, and so we may have to look at that again. After contemplating all that I heard, that's why I'm presenting. I could not support House Bill 2004 in its original presentation, in its original form. But with these amendments, I can support and feel that we have worked hard to create a fair and equitable system in which we can currently protect and give our tenants an opportunity to stabilize their lives and currently protect property owners that are good workers with the investment that they have. I understand that private property rights is one thing, but when you bring your private property into the public market, you have a certain level of responsibility, and that's why this is good policy. So I thank you very much. You all have heard about the amendments that I've recommended, and I'm very thankful to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
That's great. And can I bring up Sybil Hebb as well? Because I really want to spend the time that this deserves. People have worked incredibly hard. You all sat through 6 hours of hearings. I want to make sure that if there are any questions that you have. I want to try to interpret it in my lay term because I'm not in the field itself, and I have been an advocate for many years on these issues. I'm a lay person here struggling to try to balance all the different needs of the many people who live in Oregon. And so let me try to encapsulate really clearly what these amendments do from the base bill. The base bill on the rent stabilization part was simply saying we're going to lift the ban that cities and allow cities to adopt a rent stabilization ordinance if they choose. No sideboards at all. That was the original bill. What this amendment does is three things. One is that it says cities choose to do that, they have to establish a process of fair rate of return. What a lot of cities have done is peg that in some way to consumer price index. But they have to come up and they have to have that dialogue at the local level about what that is. But we want to make sure there's no freeze. They have to establish a process for fair rate of return. Number two, what this amendment does is there is an appeals process so that if landlords say, well, in addition to CPI or whatever the formula is, I need to have more because I'm refinancing because I'm fixing it up in some way. There may be some reason beyond what the established rate of return is. Number three, the new construction. And I know this is everything you said, but I'm just trying to say it in a different way in my lay terms. So new construction means that if new units come online, that for the first 5 years from the permit of occupancy, not from when it's completed, but when actually they get the permit for people to move in, that that is exempt from any kind of rent stabilization process so that if developers set a price, that they can kind of adjust it in that 5 years to meet the market as well as their mortgage demands. That's the rent stabilization piece. On the no cause or no stated cause, some people call it, what it says is if it comes, the base bill comes up with a set of criteria so that landlords may end a rental agreement, terminate a lease agreement under a whole set of circumstances where landlords can reclaim their property if they want to move in, if direct family want to move in, if they want to demolish it or use it for another purpose or sell the property, et cetera. So there's a whole set of ways in which landlords can have a just cause or a good cause to terminate leases. But if they have, what the amendment says, the original bill said if you do that, you have to pay 3 months relocation. What the amendment says is you only have to pay relocation if you have five units or more, because apparently the loan process for four units or less is often you can do on a residential loan, whereas it becomes more commercial. Gets you, somehow people seem to think that the four to five is a big difference. The other thing is that we reduce the relocation expenses from 3 months to one. So that this means that landlords that want to sell a building and end the leases of people who have been paying and their tenants who may have been there and are paying and are doing everything right, that's fine, but you need to pay 1 month in relocation because that is a cost of business. And when you're five units or more, you should just consider that cost of business. And then lastly, it says that no cause will still be allowed in the first 6 months of a tenancy, because some of the things that we've heard from people is, well, you know, sometimes you just don't know if it's going to really work out. Maybe it's a dynamics. Maybe it's not an FED thing, but maybe there's dynamics where people don't get along or something like that. And so we've exempted the first 6 months of a tenancy and we're from the no stated cause, so that landlords may still use a no-cause rent termination in the first 6 months. So these are the ways that I think we have stretched really, really hard to try to meet the needs that we heard were the most pressing needs of landlords, while also trying to provide more stability for the 40% of Oregonians that are renters who are terrified of having a rent increase they can't afford or having an eviction for no cause of their own. This is our attempt to really have listened to all the concerns. So I want to make sure that people understand what is on the table and have ample opportunity to ask the technical questions of the people who know way more about this than I do. So are there questions that people have? Yes, Representative Urban.
So thanks.
Urban.
Thanks, and I appreciate having this discussion, too. This is valuable, so I appreciate that. So Representative Meek or whoever wants to answer this. So as I said, I'm a landlord, and this is my retirement that you're partially appropriating for other people's uses here. But the one thing that's kind of shocking to me is the phrase fair rate of return. What if a municipality determines that a fair rate of return is zero? And then you could say back to me that, well, I have a right of appeal, but I'm going to back to the same judge, jury, and executioner that made that determination in the first place. So what would you say to that, though? And I can imagine some municipalities that might think that's okay to do a fair rate of return of zero or less than zero even. So what would you say to that?
Yes, Chair Kinnegar, Matt. Representative Nierman, members of the committee at Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center. I think the answer to your question is that there are constitutional requirements that would need to be adhered to in any local ordinance that moved forward, and I don't think there would be any definition of fair rate of return that would equal zero. So if that were to be something that a local ordinance would in some event pass, I think that would be subject to challenge. And any local ordinance would be, I think, provided through or come up with through a lot of input from local stakeholders. So that would be a place for the local government to make the decision about what they thought was right.
So can I follow?
Yes, please do.
So you would say that if it was a zero rate of return, that I assume you're referring to, that would be an unlawful takings, then an unconstitutional taking of my property. That's what you're getting at, right?
Chair Kinnegar, Representative Nierman, yes, I think that's right.
So what about 0.00000001% of return there? Now you're not taking my property. Now you got away or what number would you come up with that's fair then? I mean, you're not the city council or the municipality that's doing it, but
And Chair Kinnegar, Representative Nierman, I think that's exactly the issue, is that that would be a local control discussion, and the local government would need to take into account all of those rules and requirements and come up with an ordinance based on the stakeholder input that satisfied the constitutional requirements and also addressed the provisions of the statute.
So but somewhere it's unconstitutional to do that. It's an unconstitutional taking.
My belief, Chair Kinnegar and Representative Nierman, is that the provisions in the statute that are in the Dash 6 satisfy those requirements, and that the local government would also need to adhere to that.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Representative Meek, I hope this doesn't sound like an attack on you. I'm so incredibly frustrated right now. I've tried over the last several years to give a reasonably fair consideration to the different sides of this issue. We've listened for hours. 2016, I was heavily involved in the conversations. And this time with some other responsibilities, I have been less involved. So some of that falls on me. My frustration right now is that I think this amendment makes this bill worse. I was so frustrated by this bill to begin with. I think it makes it worse. And here's a couple reasons why. The no cause eviction within 6 months. I think this is a bit of doublespeak here. We say that we need tenants to, so the reasoning for getting rid of no cause that's been claimed over and over is because people, you know, the cost of moving and unpredictability and everything, and now we're saying, oh, but only if you just move in. Okay, so it's like, wait a minute, if you just moved in, isn't that when you need more stability? Because you just forked out the money to move in, and all of a sudden if there's a no cause, and I get that was an attempt to have a concession to people having this, but what's to keep landlords from just at 5 months starting to do no cause evictions, just to make sure it doesn't roll it into one of these month to months? The other thing that I just really kind of is frustrating me right now is this idea that a tenant can break the lease. The language, at least in the LPRO analysis write-up, says, you know, and I haven't, you know, gone through the amendment word by word, but according to what was just described and what I reread on when you guys cited this, it says that if we as a landlord have a fixed tenancy agreement, so a lease, so they are agreeing to stay there for 6 months or a year or whatever, that they get to break it with 30 days. That's what this says, though. At least this write-up. And that, to me, makes absolutely no sense. Well, wait a minute. I signed a contract with someone. They agree, but you get to, the renter gets to break it, but the landlord can't. That doesn't make sense. And that at the end of the lease or the fixed tenancy, that at the end of that, it automatically, if you don't offer them a new lease, that they automatically get a month-to-month. This seems like it's even more vicious and hard on landlords than the original bill, which I was frustrated to begin with. You know, there are absolutely problems. We just passed a whole bunch of bills out of this committee attempting to work with this and resolve this, but this is saying, let's take the whole mess and let's put 99% of the ownership on you wicked, evil landlords and make you deal with it all. And I'm so frustrated with this nonstop demonizing of landlords and that they have to carry the weight of this entire thing. Because there are landlords like myself who went 6 years making roughly $24 a month off of my unit and then had $13,000 worth of damage done to it. Not every landlord is getting rich off of this stuff. There are landlords like myself who managed, because the market tanked and I ended up having to move out of my own house because I couldn't afford it, still rent out those houses for $300, $400 under market value. There are good landlords, and we keep demonizing the landlords and making it harder and harder on them and making it so one person can break an agreement, but the landlord can't change their mind. I'm just so frustrated. I vented. I try not to do that in committee, but I don't know. You can respond.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Stark. And no, please, it is frustrating.
You're a good man.
And it is, well, first of all, as a landlord, the reason for the 6 months was that if the current bill, without the amendment, is exactly what you said, you're going to rent to somebody, there's no out. And if you give a just cause and the just cause says, because I want it, or just, you know, and they haven't done anything wrong, then the current bill says you have to pay 3 months' rent to them to relocate. And because otherwise, there's no out. They have continued, and I don't know if it's in there or not, but you have no way to end the lease. And so my amendment is trying to provide an access and a source for landlords to end the lease some way or somehow without having a burden of 3 months' rent. Because I have tried to study this and understand this, and this is not my bill, but I'm trying to just responsibly work with what we have and trying to address the situation. And please, please, nowhere in this bill, nowhere out there in this building or outside of this building is anybody demonizing landlords. Mm-hmm.
That happened in this building.
Well, there may be a small segment of folks, but I know a lot of tenants that really love their landlords, and they appreciate the landlords, and their landlords provide a wonderful community and home for them, and they're very thankful. And I'm one of those landlords, and I've had people more than once say I'm the best landlord they ever worked with. And I collected the rent to the highest rent available. I did repairs, but and we're not trying to. It's not a demonization situation, and I don't want. It has to be equitable, and I don't want landlords to bear an overburden, a brunt on this situation. Madam Chair, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Kinnegar. Representative Mika, I understand that you personally are not attempting to demonize landlords, but when we sat through this testimony, there were people who came up and said, you know, things along the lines of, you know, we should do away with all landlords. In fact, it became a mockery of that test, you know, of the committee hearing, because people decided that they were going to make landlord bingo and play a game making fun of the landlords and their excuses instead of validating real issues that were coming up. So I do think that there has been a significant amount of demonizing landlords, even if somebody actually hasn't sat there and said you are a demon.
And I would like to respond to that. There was one person toward the very end that said something like that, and I didn't know her, but I knew the person sitting next to her, and I called and said that was very inappropriate. There was also one person on the other side of the table who said some really pejorative and kind of mocking us, I thought. You know. I don't know if you remember that testimony.
Yeah, yes.
On both sides, there was one person that stood out on both sides. And we can't always control that. And I'm sorry if I didn't do as good a job of calling it like that. I like go back after these hearings and think, how do I manage that better? But I certainly followed up right away afterwards. But I do want to just say I'm going to try to take my crack at the 6 month, because that was a discussion I was involved in. And what I had heard about, you know, really what it's trying to do is not demonize, but say, like any other business that we have, and particularly when you start to get into owning several buildings, it becomes a business. It's not the accidental landlord where you end up with the house. I remember hearing your story last year, or that you have a couple that you're juggling, or that you have it as a supplement to your retirement or things like that. When you start getting into five or more, it's more of you're running a business, and then there's certain business obligations, and we have consumer protections in a whole variety, whether it's health insurance rate review, whether it's the payday loan people who we are like, oh, we want, when banks won't lend, you know, we're appreciative, but please don't gouge people. And we're really just trying to make sure that it's a fair business, that we have some kind of regulations on it. The 6 month came out because what we heard from many, many landlords who said, and actually many of these were the smaller mom and pops who said, you know, I have been doing this for a long time. Some were big ones who had done it for 30 years and maybe had, you know, 15 units. I've been doing this a long time. I hardly ever use no cause. I don't want to use no cause. But every once in a while, you know, it's just like, you know, it doesn't work out. And normally you kind of hear that right in the beginning, that somebody's really not working out. And so really that 6 months was meant to be, I mean, I think there was some discussion about 6 months versus a year on the stability question, whether that would be, was 6 months better or a year better. I think that's up for debate about whether that would be a better and actually more stable for residents. But the idea of it was to really provide that opportunity for people where it's not clearly the landlord wants to do something else with the building, but it's also not clearly FED. And I think FED should be used to the extent possible. I think that there's been too much of using no cause as a convenience because you know, well, I'm not going to go through this process, and maybe it's going to save the tenant from having something on their record, but in fact, that actually transfers the problem onto another landlord. So I think some of these things we're looking at what's fair to other landlords. We had a number of landlords that came up and actually testified for the bill on that regard, too. So I have many, many friends who are landlords, and I've learned a lot more from them, some of whom were supportive of the base bill, some of whom were not supportive of the base bill but became more supportive in this, some of whom may not still support it. And there's a whole range. And I think what I really don't want to get lost in this discussion, because I think we've been over backwards to say how can we really be fair to landlords, and I will say that there are people that are upset and feel like we've gone overboard on fairness to landlords. We need to, when you think about how unpredictable the environment is for the almost 2 million people in the state who are tenants, it's really significant. And so I just wanted to say that again, because the 6 month, you know, there's a lot of discussion around that, and I'm actually really like surprised to see this is not a release valve in some way, that it would be interpreted as being worse for landlords. So anyway, maybe you could address that on a technical level.
And thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Stark. Back to the answer to that question. So if you go past the 6 months, then you're really stuck with that tenant for a while. So if you're the point of this was that, or hopefully if it gets to a year, we're open to further discussion. But if you take a risk with somebody and you rent to them, and you find out that, you know, they're really not responsible tenants, and but under the current provision, you would have somebody moving in within 6 months that you'd have to pay 3 months relocation for if it's not working out. We want to make sure, well, I was trying to protect landlords, that if I took a risk on somebody within that first 6 months and it just wasn't working out, I had no liability for their moving expenses. Because I do know as a landlord, the more turnover I have, it's more expensive. You have vacancy loss, you have always repairs and everything else to prepare for the new tenant. Keeping tenants, keeping your units occupied is the best route. So I don't see this as a tool for somebody to change over every 6 months. It's inexpensive and ineffective. But the main reason of this, that amendment, is to make sure that those landlords that are taking a risk to rent to somebody, that maybe they're out of state or who knows, but it's not to give them an out to quickly turn over again. It's to protect them, to make sure that they don't have to pay relocation fees for somebody that is not a good actor.
And I've heard it described in two ways. One is safety valve and the other is security blanket. That's kind of what I've heard. So yes, please. And I think we've just invited Emily, who is the legislative counsel who drafted the bill and the amendment. So why don't you come up in case there are any other technical clarifications on the amendments or on the base bill.
Where are we going? Here or there?
Did you want to respond first?
I was just Chair Kinnegay, Representative Stark, going to respond to your question about the tenant ability to terminate the leases. I think you're looking at the language in subsection B on line 5 of page 3. Is that what you're looking at?
I'm looking at the staff summary.
Oh, so in the Dash 6 amendment, and maybe this is what LC was going to speak about, but I think the way this language works is that, and this is actually current law, it's just a restatement of the current law with respect to tenants' abilities to give notices during a fixed-term lease. It got moved from one place in the section in the current law, and that's why it shows up in the new, in the amendment. But basically, if you read it all the way through in the actual legislative language, what it says is the tenant can give a notice to the landlord at any time during the fixed-term tenancy, but the end period of the notice has to take effect either at the end of the fixed-term tenancy or 30 days from the date of giving the notice, whichever is later. So it's basically allowing the tenant to say to the landlord, I do want to move out at the end of the lease, or I don't want it to roll over into a month-to-month continuing. It doesn't allow the tenant to change the terms of the fixed-term lease, which I think is what your question was. Maybe LC can add more to that.
Sure. Yeah.
Go in
here.
I was going to. Thank you. I was going to ask them why put it in there, because most leases will also have that out, and the way you get out of a lease is generally in the contract itself.
And Chair Kinnegay, Representative Noble, I think the number one, it's current law, so it's sort of been in the statute for a long time that way, and I think this is just, you know, a way to make sure that it fits within the context of the way the new amendment was drafted, to keep it there. And I think it's useful, I think, for the landlord to know, to have a heads up from the tenant what their intention is, and that way they don't have to be guessing until the very end of the day to know whether they want it to roll over to month. I guess that would be my answer. So.
Let's see. I'll let her ask you a question because you've had a few, but we'll go back to you.
So, Representative Meek, I'm going to maybe be a little snarly on the other end of it. No disrespect, of course. I had a hard time reading this, accepting the -6 amendments, just because after listening to Cassie and all of the explanations and everything and coming up with the, of course, is compromises. Mostly because, as somebody who's been doing social work for many, many years and working with folks who are struggling all the time, and, because I have the crisis door, right? People come to my office and, meet with my staff when they are struggling. And because I know that in Multnomah County, was it last year? A third of the people who came into shelter in January of last year had been homeless for the very first time in their lives because of rent increases and because of no-cause evictions. That was families. It was a lot of folks. I know that we've had 3,000 people, 3,000 families, so the head of household, whomever, on the queue for the mobile housing team. 3,000 people. That is outrageous. And I know a lot of them had, evictions, no-cause evictions. And I know that rents have skyrocketed. We heard yesterday from several people, many, many people, talking about, food bank and the hunger issues in our state, and that we realize that is because of huge increases in rents and people, struggling with homelessness. These are huge issues, and I feel like we're making a lot of compromise in this. It's far more compromise than I would like to see. But I have to say that there has to be balance in the world. People have to give and take. It's a little more give than I would like to do right now, but I'm willing to go with it because I feel like we have to do something. We have to do something. And, the reality of the situation is there are a lot of good landlords, but there are some bad landlords, and there are some people coming into this state who are buying up our property and flipping it over really quickly, and there's a seminar in Portland sometime in the near future showing people how to flip houses. It just is frustrating to me that we have to look at this from both sides, and we have to not look at it just from our side. That's the thing I want to get clear at this moment in time. We really need to look at the balanced picture. And if parts of these, I remember the six-month thing because many landlords sat up there and said, creepy tenant, that they were getting rid of creepy tenant for some other people in the building who were nervous or scared or whatever. I get that, and I appreciate that you're making an effort to do a compromise on that. But it can lead to another opportunity for somebody to say, you're creepy just because I don't like the way you look. Or you're creepy because my tenant doesn't like how you move in the world, and that may be based on lots of other things. It may not just be, actual creepy. It may just be because you're a person of color. It may just be because, you're a person with a disability. So, I'm going to struggle with these things, and I'm going to say straight up that it's important to me that we figure out the compromise and not just take it from a landlord perspective or a tenant perspective, but somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to go with it because it's somewhere in the middle, not exactly in the middle that I want. But I just think it's really, really important that we pay attention to these pieces. I'm sure we'll see more down the road because we still have a huge number of people who are still homeless and can't find a place to live because they can't afford it. You know, my son is not technically not homeless, but he can't afford to find a place to live. You know, he's, you know, sharing houses with lots of other, you know, young people because they can't afford to find a place to live on their own, even though they have full-time jobs and are doing the best they can. So this is a huge issue. Again, not just, you know, not just for me personally or professionally, but understanding that it, you know, it affects a lot of people, and I just want people to look at it from that perspective. It's just, you know, take an opportunity to step on the other side of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Sanchez. I appreciate that very much. And that's, this has been a very daunting task for me and a very overwhelming situation sometimes to address. And it hasn't been easy. And but, you know, I've tried to, what I've recommended to folks when I was during my campaign is, like, they were complaining about leaders doing this, leaders doing that. And I said, well, if you don't like what they're doing, then vote somebody else in. I said, I'm trying to go there and stand up and be courageous in the face of adversity to represent Oregonians. And, you know, this is a very difficult task. And I'm trying to, you know, stand up and live up to those words. And so in this capacity, I agree with you, Vice Chair Sanchez, that but we're not in a perfect world, and I don't think we're ever going to get a perfect solution. But as we're sitting here addressing this crisis right now, what can we do right now? We don't want to wait 2 more years, because I think we're doing really good work this session. We have some difficult work we're doing to try to address the situation, both in inducing affordable housing, hopefully, you know, working with municipalities with their process of getting permits and development through much quicker, a little more meaningful, and inducing that development. And so I don't want to do anything this year that's going to stifle producing more units and livable units and affordable units and units that folks want as part of their lifestyle. We can accommodate all of them, but we have to judiciously work through this together. And that's why I appreciate the cooperation we're getting, because it's only through cooperation that we can really help everybody and try to address everybody's concerns. Mm-hmm. But lack of input from some industries, it's hard for us to, you know, make really good decisions. And I appreciate where you're at, but I'm shooting from the dark here and trying to just address from my own personal perspective and the input I've been receiving. So thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Kankar. A couple clarifications. One, as far as the demonizing, and Chair, I think you handle committees well, and I know that, you know, people came up on both sides and said negative things about the other side. Mm-hmm. The part that really aggravated me, though, was it is organizers who are in this building on a regular basis that are the ones that organized the bingo game to make a mockery of the landlord's perspective. We have copies of that game that they were passing out. In fact, when I stepped out for a minute to use a restroom, and they're showing it to me and laughing about it. That's frustrating, because that's not someone new coming in just, you know, who has a bone to pick. That's people who are in the building on a regular basis. But regardless, that's not the policy itself. While we've been sitting here, I've had several people email me and text me saying that I am not accurate on my reading of, you know, being able to break the lease. I read it as, at any time during the fixed term, the tenant may terminate the tenancy without cause. So I get that several people smarter than me are telling me from both sides that that's not how I'm reading that is different. However, I still have significant issues with the idea that at the end of a lease, if you give someone a lease, then maybe it's a tenant and a landlord that just aren't getting along. And so you give them a 6-month lease or 12-month lease, and you think, you know what, this isn't really working, but, you know, we'll stick out the lease and so forth, but it automatically rolls over. And so a lease subjects somebody basically to all the same restrictions as far as a landlord as a month to month. And we specifically in 2016, when we talked about things, we differentiated between those things. And now we're saying, no, we're not going to do that. And then
before you go on, could you answer that, actually?
My name is Emily Moss. I work at the Office of Legislative Counsel, and I'm the drafter of the bill and the amendment. So you are talking about in the Dash 6 Amendment, subsection 4B. And what this reads is, at any time during the fixed term, the landlord may, or I'm sorry, the tenant may terminate the tenancy without cause by giving the landlord notice in writing not less than 30 days prior to the specified ending date for the fixed term, or not less than 30 days prior to the date designated in the notice for the termination of the tenancy, whichever is later.
Correct.
So what this does is it says that a tenant that is in a fixed term tenancy, so they have a lease, let's say it's for a year, they can terminate their tenancy at any time, but they are still subject to the provisions of their lease. They still have to fulfill the contract that they are a part of. They have to finish out that year.
That's helpful.
The reason why the language reads the way it does is because it says you have to give notice within at least 30 days prior to the specified ending date of the term, or 30 days from the date of the notice, whichever is later. So if you want to give your notice halfway through your lease term, that's fine, but you still have to finish out your lease. As far as the rolling over to a month-to-month tenancy comment, that is, current law states that if you are in a fixed term and you reach the end of the term and the tenant doesn't ask to renew or terminate and the landlord doesn't offer to renew or terminate, it automatically becomes a month-to-month tenancy.
But if the, it doesn't it say that the landlord pretty much has to offer to renew it?
Now, the Dash 6 Amendment does say that, but in current law, they don't have to offer to renew, but a fixed-term tenancy automatically becomes a month-to-month tenancy if neither party takes any action.
And may I have one last, and I'll try to stop. one last clarification.
You know what? It's important, Representative Stark. I appreciate you asking questions.
Thank you, Chair Kenny Garrett. And then I wanted to clarify my comment on the 6 months. I think the reason I said that I feel like that's doublespeak is because I think the 6 months, you know, is even harder on the tenants. And I understand that it's intended as a landlord protection. But the reality of the no cause is risk comes at any time. Okay, not, you know, and there are a lot of great tenants out there, and there's a couple bad apples, just like landlords. There's a lot of great landlords and a couple bad apples. Okay, but risk, you know, I've had a number of fantastic renters and so forth. And again, I'm not making any sort of significant money off of my two rentals that I accidentally got. You know, I couldn't sell it. But with the risk, you know, that the two people I've had to evict, one of them, it was 6 years in, and all of a sudden drugs became an issue, and all of a sudden the complaints started rolling in. That's not something that happens in the first 6 months. Okay? That was something new. And another one, it was 9 months until I found out that they had been basically, that they had slaughtered all the chickens by letting them die in the chicken coop and just closing them up to die. Like, there are things that you don't find things out immediately. I mean, once in a while.
But those,
you know,
would be reasons that you would take someone to court and not pass the problem on to another landlord. I mean, those are things that people should be held responsible for.
And what I'm saying, though, is those things, not all things pop up in the first 6 months, though. Okay, there's significant risk and there's life changes and, you know, that end up being an issue. And that's what I'm trying to get at, is risk isn't confined to, oh, we just met, let's try out a little while, let's date a little bit and figure out how this works. Risk is always there. Anyway,
I'd love it if someone could address this very specific, because I think specifics are helpful here. The drugs, the slaughtering, or letting chickens die.
So, Chair Kenegeyer, members of the committee, Representative Stark, if there is, so yes, there's risk that can arise at any time, absolutely. And for the record, I want to make sure that it's very clear that we're not demonizing anyone in this situation. We're concerned about making sure that the law provides a structure where there's fairness for both sides. So we feel like it's currently out of balance, and that's why we're here today on this issue. With respect to your particular question, if there is something like drug use, that's clearly a for-cause notice. That could happen. That's clearly something that could issue a for-cause notice. And in fact, getting rid of a tenant who is a bad actor, and we clearly want tenants who are bad actors to be removed. We think that's better for other tenants living in proximity or nearby, whether it's multifamily or single family. A for-cause notice is the quickest way to get rid of a person who's not complying with the rules. A for-cause notice has a 24-hour notice provision, or a 48-hour, or a 72-hour, or a 10-day, depending on the type of violation. I know you know this. And a no-cause notice requires, under current law, 30 or 60 days. And that's time that has to elapse before the landlord can take the step of going to court. And there's less time that has to elapse before the landlord has to take the step of going to court if it's a for-cause notice. So that's the quickest and most efficient way of getting rid of a bad actor. If there are damages to property, in my experience, and no one condones that, and it's not a good thing when it happens, if that happens, it is less likely to be allowed to continue if a for-cause notice is used, because you're more likely to be able to get the sheriff to come out and lock the doors and remove the person for the bad behavior more quickly. So that would be sort of my answer about the differences in the types of proceedings. But.
Okay. Any other?
Oh. I do.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two quick questions, and Representative Meek, they're both directed towards you. While you're developing the Dash 6 amendments, can you tell me who or if you had any landlords at the table helping you craft those?
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, and Vice Chair Olson, I wish I had some folks that were willing to. I had let folks know that we're working on some of these amendments, and the response was no. We want no. No on 2004, not willing to address or be part of any work group. And so it's unfortunate because I wish they would have. And so in absence of, you know, of a vacuum, I mean, you just fill the void, you know, in a vacuum the void is filled without any input. And so I wish there was more involvement because that way both industries or both parties, the tenants and landlords, could have a better discussion of what's, you know, fair and equitable. All at least have your concerns brought up. But
at least you provided a landlord, property manager, realtor, yeah,
right,
perspective.
And, not a perfect one either, but just mm-hmm. from and I didn't get everything I wanted either, so
okay. I'm glad it wasn't perfect. All right, so the my last question then is, as we've been moving forward with these amendments and we allow the cities and the counties to move forward with some type of rent stabilization if they choose so, what guarantee is there that you see in the amendments that would allow the landlords to be at the table? And I say that because I have some concern what just happened up there in Portland with the commissioners up there, mm-hmm. kind of like closing the door to the landlords being there. So I'm just curious your thoughts.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair Olson, thank you so much for bringing this point up. And I, too, am very frustrated by the actions that the city of Portland took. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel it was very fair that they did not, with a short window, quote unquote, trying to address an emergency, did not take landlords or property owners full, input into consideration. And so, unfortunately, what guarantee do we have? And my hope is that right now, I guess the hope is that if it's inequitable, that's an actionable item, and the realtors are in a process of a legal pursuit of trying to correct that, and spending hard-earned realtor dollars, you know, $150,000 to $175,000 worth of those folks, because it wasn't fair. And I hope that we set a precedent that in order to pass good ordinances, whether it be county or city or any municipality, district, that all sides are considered, because I don't think it's been fair. And I hope that the message gets brought across to the city of Portland that I for one, was very disappointed in the process in which was brought forward. And I'm not a city of Portland resident, but I do run a business there, and I pay a city of Portland business tax. And so I do pay for my fair share with no voice in the matters at all. But so there's no guarantee. But my hope is that this process that the realtors are working on right now may hopefully reconsider their future moves and decisions.
Well, I appreciate your comments. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. Well, I have a couple of attorneys here to ask some legal questions. So right now I have in my rentals, I have contracts with all of my tenants, and each one of those contracts describes a no-cause eviction. Are my contracts grandfathered in?
Chair Kindergeyer, Representative Nierman, I think the best place to look there is in Section 7 of the Dash 6 amendments, which is the applicability clause. The bill has two different provisions, one related to fixed-term tenancies and one related to month-to-month tenancies. The fixed-term tenancies do not get addressed or covered by this bill until they are newly entered into or renewed after the date of the effective date of the bill. Month-to-month tenancies under Oregon law essentially renew every 30 days. So every 30 days, it's a new rental agreement, essentially.
It's a new contract every 30 days.
Though. A new contract every 30 days. And so the provision in the bill says that these, when passed, the termination notices that are implicated by the bill aren't covered by the bill until they are occurring on or after the 30th day after the effective date of the bill. So it would only be to new month-to-month tenancies that we're renewing on or after the 30th day.
So your answer is all of my contracts are in a 30-day month-to-month right now. So your answer would be no then to that. Go ahead.
Chair Kindergeyer, Representative Nierman. So you did not say whether these are month-to-month tenancies or fixed-term tenancies. If it's a month-to-month tenancy, so under both circumstances, you have a rental agreement, and that is a contract. If it's a month-to-month tenancy, the contract automatically renews every 30 days. Mm-hmm. If it's a fixed-term tenancy, it might renew at the end of the term. And as Sybil explained, under the applicability language, this, if this becomes law, would apply to new fixed-term tenancies, so if it's renewed or entered mm-hmm. into for the first time, and it would apply to month tenancies. So the tenancy is continuous, but the contract automatically renews every 30 days. So a month-to-month tenancy that is currently in existence, it would apply to that 30 days after the effective date. So someone who's currently today in a month-to-month tenancy, it would not impact the contract under which they are acting now, but 30 days after the effective date, that contract would be affected.
So essentially your answer is no, because my contract talks, they're all in 30-day month-to-month tenancies. Mm-hmm. So essentially my contracts are not grandfathered in, that I'll be subject to the new law after 30 days, right? 30 days after it's passed.
Chair Kindergeyer, Representative Nierman, the month-to-month tenancy, the contract that you're operating under currently, it would be grandfathered in, but then when it automatically renews 30 days after the effective date, that contract would be subject to this.
So that's a distinction without a difference. At the end of 30 days, then I'm subject to the new law then if this passes.
Yes.
So I'm interested, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm interested in the ability of the state to tear up a contract there. And you're claiming that that's not going, that's not happening. But so I would like to compare this to, for instance, if I were to produce legislation that would say the state may no longer enter into Tier 1 PERS agreements with state workers at the end of the current contract that it signed with state workers.
Representative Nierman, I want to try to keep it to this. Well, ask
okay.
About this contract.
I'll give you a chance to just answer that then, and then I'll leave that alone. So.
Chair Kindergeyer, Representative Nierman, I believe your question was, how can the state reach into an existing contract and change its terms? The very short answer is it cannot, and in this case it is not, because this would affect a new contract. So by having this applicability language, it puts everyone on notice that 30 days after the effective date of this bill becoming law, if it were to become law, month-to-month tenancies will be subject to the provisions in subsection 3 of section 1 of this bill.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah,
one last question, Representative Gorsuch.
Well, it's really more of a comment.
Okay.
So thank you all for your testimony, and especially for the expertise. This bill is not easy, right? And
As I've sat here for a number of hours, along with my colleagues, you know, I've listened to both sides. I do believe that most landlords are trying to do the right thing. And I understand frustration on both sides. I mean, there are certain things that I think the landlord side has a good idea about. I think there are a lot of things on the renter side that, you know, those are serious considerations too. But in this case, with Dash 6, I think, considering the urgency of all of this, that Dash 6 isn't perfect, but it's certainly a good compromise for what we want to try and do in terms of dealing with an emergency. However, as people have testified before, this can't be the end. We have to continue to have these discussions. We also have to continue to try and build many more units. And so hopefully this is the beginning and not the end. But I understand frustration on all sides. Sometimes people think that a good policy is one where no one's happy. So I maybe this is a great policy, but I support the Dash 6.
Okay, I'll just take my prerogative as chair and put in a final word for Dash 6. I think that we have had hours of testimony, and outside of that particular hearing, we've really tried to incorporate the emails, the calls that we've had. We are trying to do something to stabilize life for tenants and make sure that they're not either displaced or paying so much of their income in rent that that hunger is increasing, that they don't have money to pay in their local economies. And so I think that, you know, we've tried very hard, and I want to thank Representative Meek, who, as a realtor, property manager, did bring particularly that perspective to the table in coming up with these amendments and trying to really be fair to all sides. So we're going to take a vote now on the amendments, and we'll do a roll call on that. And I think there's enormous amount that's gone into this. I really want to thank you. So, time to call the question. You've already introduced it.
I think I did the dash
at the beginning. Yes. We forgot. We had a vice chair introduce the amendment. And Ashley, could you please call the roll call?
Yes.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Nierman.
No.
Representative Noble.
No.
Representative Caluso?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kinney Guy?
Aye. Okay, the amendments are adopted, and we're going to stand at ease for a few minutes. I'm not exactly sure the words. We're reopening the committee.
Yeah.
Thank you for having stood at ease. I hope that I gaveled when we were supposed to do that. Maybe I didn't. Okay. Vice Chair Sanchez, please, can we have a motion on the bill?
Chair Kinney-Geyer, I move House Bill 2004 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Sanchez moves House Bill 2004 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? I realize we're almost out of time. We've had a lot of discussion.
Just some comments. Yeah. I generally don't speak when my voice has already been heard, but I just have to reiterate my own frustration. We have an issue. Sure. I don't believe 2004 actually solves the issue. I think 2004 in the long term will actually create more hardship in supply, and I don't see it actually benefiting us. I know there are some unscrupulous landlords, and I know there's some tenants who are less than responsible, but I think it's a larger issue than what this committee deals with. Like, we have a supply issue, we have economics involved, we have land use issues, and I don't see where this particular bill will provide the solution to the problem we're trying to address. My own thoughts.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have one additional concern, and that's related to the new construction. I believe when you amortize and work on your financing, even in a commercial rate, that a 15-year mark would be more responsible for us to work with. So I'm hoping that that would be heard and potentially could be dealt with later on.
Okay. Thank you. And I do want to remind, we're setting the floor on, mm-hmm. if cities do that, they have to do a bare minimum of that. Mm-hmm. It can always be built on that. So I think it's probably time to call the question here. We've had a lot of good discussion and debate. I really do appreciate that. I'm eager to take the vote. I'm eager to send this on its way for future consideration. So, Ashley, please call the roll.
Representative
Gorsuch? Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Noble?
No.
Representative
Ulster? Aye.
Representative Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kaniga? Aye. Motion passes. And we will assign Karin Power with maybe some backup.
Yep.
And Peluso.
Yep.
Co-carry.
Yep.
Representative Peluso, Representative Power. Okay. And with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2004, and we're adjourned. Work session on House Bill 2004, and we're adjourned.